Shalom. Welcome to Ask JTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Ben Dov, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, I want to speak about something that happened this past week that was very, very disturbing, and that really proves why it is so urgently essential that JTF become a mass movement, both in America and in Israel. This past week, Senator Rand Paul had a 13-hour filibuster on the issue of drones, on the use of drones. And suddenly Rand Paul, the son of the Nazi Ron Paul, who agrees with his father, and we're going to discuss that, he agrees with his father on the terrible positions that his father has taken all of these years. Suddenly, Rand Paul became a very serious contender for the Republican presidential nomination in 2016. Suddenly, Rand Paul became the hero of the Tea Party, of everyone on talk radio, of everyone on Fox. Suddenly, anyone who questions Rand Paul or criticizes Rand Paul is now mocked. I mean, it's just incredible what happened this past week. Just incredible. Now, first of all, let's understand that the reason Rand Paul became so popular with his filibuster is because the anti-Obama forces in the Republican Party and in the conservative movement are so desperate, are so hungry for someone who's finally going to stand up, that they don't care if it's from the left, from the right. They don't care if he's wrong on the issues. As long as he's seen as standing up, they don't care what the reason is. Which, of course, is very dangerous. Because then they're attracted to people who are doing things that are evil, like Rand Paul. Just because Rand Paul seemingly was standing up to Obama, that was enough. That was enough to rally all the Republicans and all the conservatives and all the talk show host people and all the Fox people. It came to the point where one major radio talk show host, an evangelical Christian in Iowa, said that if the Iowa presidential caucuses were held now, Rand Paul would win by a landslide. And I'm talking about the caucuses to decide who's going to be the Republican nominee for president. This big radio talk show host in Iowa said that Rand Paul would win by a landslide if it was held now. I mean, this is an unbelievably insane situation. Just insane. Because people were so hungry for someone to stand up to Obama, they didn't care if Hitler or the devil stood up to Obama, as long as someone's standing up to Obama. That's the measure of desperation that we've seen since the election, since Obama's re-election. But the fact is, Rand Paul, and this is something we're going to be doing a video on. You're going to be seeing a video in the next few days on this subject. Rand Paul is more left-wing than Barack Hussein Obama. Yes, no exaggeration, and that's pretty hard to do. To be more left-wing than Obama, of course, is very hard to do because Obama is on the far left. But Rand Paul, like his father Ron Paul, is actually more left-wing than Obama on major issues. For example, on the issue in which he was filibustering, the issue of drones. What was he filibustering about? He was filibustering to oppose and protest the policy of killing Muslim terrorist mass murderers with drones. Now, of course, he demagogued the issue and spoke about, would you just kill some American citizens sitting in a cafe in the United States just drinking coffee or just having tea with his son? Would you send out a drone and kill him and kill him even if he wasn't doing anything? If he wasn't doing anything violent? I mean, a stupid, absurd question. Nobody is proposing doing that. Nobody is proposing just going around and killing somebody in the middle of the United States, an American citizen in the United States, with drones. That's something that has not happened. That's something that no president is considering doing. Even Obama isn't considering doing something so absurd. It's absolutely ridiculous. But he brought it up to demagogically try to turn it into some constitutional issue. Baloney. He is against, Rand Paul is against any drone attacks. He's against drone attacks against Muslim terrorists abroad. He's against any drone attacks. And so Rand Paul actually condemns Barack Hussein Obama for being too tough on the Muslim terrorists. That's what this was all about. And that's why he's being praised by the left. Not only are the Republicans and conservatives and all the other idiots praising him, because the Republicans and conservatives are idiots. They proved what idiots they are this week. They are idiots. But not only are they praising him, the leftists, of course, are praising him. John Stewart and Bill Mayer and all these other radical leftists, they're saying, oh, he's so right. And the news media, if you'll notice, is giving the left-wing news media, and I'm talking about the left-wing news media, is giving Rand Paul very positive coverage. They're turning him into a hero. Very positive coverage. Because he attacked Obama from the left. Can you imagine this? A guy does a filibuster to attack Obama from the left, saying Obama's not left-wing enough. Obama's not appeasing the Muslim terrorists enough. And everybody applauds him. Wow, that was brilliant. That was, what did they say on Fox? It was a stroke of genius that he did this. That he did a filibuster on this issue. That was a stroke of genius. Rand Paul is against killing any Muslim terrorists. Rand Paul is against any action to confront Islamic terrorism. There was a vote in the Senate in September 2012 on opposing Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. Just a non-binding resolution saying we are opposed to Iran's nuclear bomb-making program and the United States will oppose this program and will work to stop this program. A non-binding resolution just saying the sense of the Senate that we should work to stop Iran from developing nuclear weapons. The vote in the Senate was 90-1. 90 senators in favor, one senator voted against. Who was the one senator voted against that resolution? Rand Paul. Even a resolution just saying we're against Iran's nuclear bomb-making program, Rand Paul voted no. Rand Paul has held up and prevented sanctions, economic sanctions against Iran. Not only is he against taking military action, which is essential, because military action in the end is the only solution to this problem. Not only is he against the U.S. bombing and destroying the U.S. Air Force making surgical strikes on Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. Not only is he against that, which would be the only sane thing to do, but he is against even economic sanctions on Iran. He's against even a non-binding resolution that every single senator, Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative, everybody supported it. He's against a non-binding resolution that would just say we're against Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. Even that he voted against. But he doesn't vote against everything. Oh, no. He voted in favor of Chuck Hagel, the left-wing, anti-American, anti-Semitic, anti-Israel piece of garbage to be Secretary of Defense. Chuck Hagel he supported. He was one of only four Republican senators to vote in favor of confirming Chuck Hagel as Secretary of Defense. And so let's understand something. He is his father, except he's a more clever version of his father. Ron Paul, his father, who appeared on Iranian Nazi terrorist television to say that Israel is a Nazi country, Ron Paul went on Iranian terrorist television and said that Israel is a Nazi country, that Gaza is like a concentration camp, and actually, in effect, praised Muslim terrorists and said they're just throwing bombs to resist. I mean, he sounded like a spokesman for Al-Qaeda. That's his father, Ron Paul. Look at Rand Paul's actions. Rand Paul obviously agrees with his father's agenda. He's a more clever version of his father. And the reason he's succeeding so well with the filibuster and everything he's doing now is not because he's so brilliant. This is just like Barack Hussein Obama. Barack Hussein Obama didn't get elected president because he's such a great politician and he's so brilliant. Barack Hussein Obama is not a great politician and is not brilliant, and neither is Rand Paul. Rand Paul is succeeding because the news media supports him. just like Barack Hussein Obama succeeded because the news media supported him and backed him up. When the news media is behind you, they make you look great. They make everything you look like a success story. And everything your opponents do look like failures. That's the way the media operates. And the Republicans and conservatives fall for this? Rand Paul supports giving U.S. citizenship to 20 million illegal aliens. Openly, he says that we should have what he calls a path to citizenship. He wants to make 20 million illegal aliens U.S. citizens. If that happens, the United States of America is finished. That will open the door not only to the 20 million that will become citizens, not only that the 20 million illegals will become citizens right away, and that, of course, creates a tremendous new demographic in this country and a new voting power for the left. Not only that, that is like an open invitation to tens of millions and eventually hundreds of millions of third world people from all over the world flooding into America, because they will know without any doubt that as long as they get in here, they're going to be legalized and they're eventually going to become citizens. That will be the surest signal to all of them all over the world. And he favors this program, which is the destruction of the United States. We speak often about Israeli national suicide. Giving U.S. citizenship to the illegal aliens in this country is American national suicide. And Rand Paul is a staunch supporter, and always has been, of American national suicide. Rand Paul and his father Ron Paul ran on the Libertarian Party platform of open borders. When Ron Paul ran for president in 1988 as the Libertarian Party nominee, the platform of the party called for a complete end to any border controls, completely opening up the borders and allowing anyone to come in under any circumstances if they just feel like it, and to stay as long as they want and do whatever they want. That is the platform of the Libertarian Party. That's what Ron Paul and Rand Paul supported and ran on. And now he says we should give U.S. citizenship to all the illegal aliens, the 20 million illegal aliens. And the Republicans and conservatives are cheering him like he's some big hero. And Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and everybody and Krauthammer and all these other idiots are all praising him. I mean, it's unbelievable. And of course, Rand Paul favors legalizing drugs. In other words, he'll turn America into another Sodom and Gomorrah. This is beyond the pale. Rand Paul is one of the few Republicans who is actually worse than Obama. That's very, very hard to do. That is really hard to get yourself in a position where you could be worse than Obama. You really got to go really, really far out to be worse than Obama. Rand Paul manages to do that. Now, how is he worse than Obama? He's worse than Obama because he calls himself a Republican and calls himself a conservative and calls himself Tea Party. If he became president, it would be much easier for him to implement his policies. When Obama proposes opening the borders and when Obama proposes these left-wing policies, most of the Republicans and most of the conservatives oppose him because Obama's proposing it. But if Rand Paul, a Republican, so-called conservative president, God forbid that should ever happen, would be proposing it, many of the Republicans would support him. And all the Democrats, certainly all the Democrats, the media, they all would support him. That combination of many Republicans and almost all Democrats, that's an overwhelming majority in Congress, and in that respect, you'll have open borders. You'll have open borders. Rand Paul will get all the applause and all the credit from the media, and then America is finished. That's the end of the United States. Unless you think that what we have in Detroit and Newark and these cities where whites are 25 or 30% of the population, if you think that's okay for the future of America, then Rand Paul is your guy. Because he will bring that about even faster than the left and faster than Obama. And he is a leftist. Libertarianism is in reality left wing. So this week, I really, really couldn't believe what took place. I was just shocked. I think there's a real danger now from Rand Paul. I think there's a real danger he could become the Republican nominee for president in 2016. We could have an election between Hillary Clinton and Rand Paul. The ultimate nightmare. I could tell you that we are not going to support Rand Paul under any circumstances. So that's one election where we would sit that election out. We would not support either one of them. But that is the ultimate nightmare scenario that might yet take place. Now you see why we've said all along JTF is so important. You can't trust Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and Fox and the columnists and the commentators and the other jerks on the so-called right, the phony right, the establishment right. You can't trust any of these people. They don't have any judgment. They've destroyed the conservative movement. They're destroying America. They're destroying America just as much as Obama. And so this was unbelievable this past week. What this incredible, almost universal praise for Rand Paul. It was just incredible. I hope something happens to stop this. I hope somebody wakes up and realizes that what this guy really represents. But again, look at the difference here. If JTF were a mass movement, we would never be in this situation because you'd have a voice of sanity saying, hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Have you forgotten who this guy is? What the hell are you applauding this guy for? Did you forget who he is? Only if JTF were a mass movement that would happen. We saw that this week. No one is telling the truth. Unless you consider the criticism he got from John McCain, but John McCain's a jerk also. That wasn't the proper criticism. John McCain was criticizing him on something. It was just, you know, two establishment zeros. John McCain, Lindsey Graham criticizing Rand Paul. They were, both sides were terrible. They were all terrible. And then everybody's mocking McCain and Graham, and everybody's praising Rand Paul. What you needed this week was a real, pure, uncompromising right-wing voice saying, Rand Paul is a leftist, he's a traitor, he's not a real Republican, he's certainly not a conservative. What he represents is disaster and destruction. That's what we needed this week, and it was nowhere to be found. There was no true conservative voice saying that. It was nowhere to be found. What a disaster. What a disaster we're facing. A generation where no one tells the truth. A generation of darkness, which is what the rabbis told us. The rabbis in the Talmud told us that this is what it was going to be like when Israel comes into being again, and we, in the end days, this is what it was going to be like. Acharit hayamin. Acharit hayamin is the end of days. This is what we're supposed to expect. And it's coming true. And it's coming true. And so, I hope that this brings home the message that we better make it to the big leagues. We better make it somehow. I mean, there is a way for us to do that. There are a couple of ways. One is that we get enough money. If we got millions of dollars, we'd become a mass movement. And even if we had $500,000 or $1 million in bank guarantees, we could run for the Knesset. If we run for the Knesset, maybe we'd have a chance. There would be, I don't know if it would be 50-50. I don't know what the odds would be, but I think we'd have a chance of getting in, but there'd be a chance that we wouldn't get in that situation. I don't know. But at least we'd have a shot. If we get in the Knesset, then we become major players. Then finally there's a voice of sanity and truth in America and in Israel. Once we get in the Knesset, we have a voice. We become major players. So that's our dream. That's our goal. Unfortunately, you know, we're in a situation here where if it doesn't happen, God help us. That's all I could say. God help us. And so I urge all of our great JTFers, because you're the people who do understand. You're the people who do know. You're the people who are more logical. I urge our great JTFers, help us, participate with us, help us get to that point where we could become a bigger movement and we could raise the money necessary to have the bank guarantees so that we could get into the Knesset. Help us. And help us, you know, help us in general. Help us when we put up English and Hebrew videos, which you're going to be seeing. You're going to be seeing more English and Hebrew videos this week. Again, we're going to keep producing these videos. When you see me upload Hebrew and English videos, please like, favorite, share, and mirror the videos both on YouTube and on Facebook. Promote it everywhere you can. It helps us. It reaches other people with our message, and it can help. It can potentially help to build our movement. We need your help when it comes to the videos. And we need your help on the forum. On the forum and on our Facebook pages. Write things on the Facebook pages and on our forum. Make the forum and the Facebook pages more inviting, more interesting, so more people will want to get involved. And finally, most of all, last but not least, we need your financial support. The more financial support we have, the better chance we have of eventually running for the Knesset, getting elected, and becoming major league players. I hope we'll be able to do it in time. I hope we'll be able to do it in time, not only in Israel, but also before the presidential election in 2016 in America. I don't know when the election's going to be in Israel. The next Knesset election may be in 2016. So I hope we'll be able to get all this together in time. And a lot of that depends upon what each of us decides to do. And so we need your help. God bless the great JTFers who go to hayamin.org and who go to JTF.org. JTF.org is our English main page. Hayamin.org is our Hebrew main page. People who go, let's say, to JTF.org, to the English main page, there's a donate button on top. People click on the donate button, and within a couple of minutes, they can make an easy, convenient, safe credit card donation, secure credit card donation to our organization. Very, very important. God bless the great JTFers who have been doing that. And God bless the great JTFers who have been sending checks, money orders, and cash donations to our post office box. We have people who have been sending checks, money orders, and cash donations through the regular mail as well. We have some people who generously do that on a regular basis. God bless the great JTFers who are doing that. We need your help as much help as we can get, because we really are in very critical times. And if we don't make it, I just don't know. I don't see anybody else telling the truth. I mean, this Rand Paul thing just showed me, at least, that the people that you look to in the Republican Party or in the conservative movement, they're also, people that just can't be trusted. They just can't be trusted. Look what they're doing now. Now they're praising this guy who's a Nazi. And Rand Paul, by the way, is a Nazi. He and his father, when his father was running for president, accepted money from the owner of the Stormfront, which is the biggest Nazi website and forum on the internet. And they wouldn't return the donation. They were proud to accept the donation. They took pictures. If Ron Paul took pictures with him, this is what we're speaking about. It's a very dangerous situation for America and for Israel. Very dangerous. And so the great JTFers who help us with your donations, if you help us with giving us checks, money orders, cash donations, very, very important. And yes, if people want to help with bank guarantees, if people can help with bank guarantees, you'll get every penny back. If we run for the Knesset and we win, you'll get every penny back. If we don't run for the Knesset, if you make a bank guarantee and we decide not to run because we decide we don't think we have a realistic chance, which is also possible, if that happens, you'll also get every penny back. Only if we run and lose, God forbid, if we run and we lose, then the money will have to be handed over to the Israeli government to reimburse the Israeli government for the expenses of the campaign. But we need people to give those bank guarantees. It's a gamble, but we need people to do that. We need people's help. This is a critical time. I hope we can achieve our goals. I hope somehow we can put everything together and achieve our goals. I don't know if we can. I don't know. It's going to be hard. It's going to be very much of a challenge. But if we have determined people, anything is possible. We've got to figure out ways to get that money, to get the bank guarantees, to run for the Knesset, to become a bigger movement in America and in Israel, to do what has to be done. Because if we get our foot in the Knesset, that's the beginning for us. That's the beginning of real, serious, historic change. And I think everybody knows, God only knows how much we, America, Israel, the world, needs that change, needs that voice of truth. That voice of truth is so desperately needed. That's what this past week, I think, clearly proved. Anyway, once again, God bless our great JTFers, and now we're going to get to our great questions. And we start out with the fantastic Ruby Stars, who writes, and I quote, "Greetings, Chaim. What do you think the origin of giants in the Bible, such as King Og and Goliath, was?" Unquote. Okay, great question. I think that God creates, I don't know what their physical origin was, or their hereditary origin, or genetic origin, I have no idea. God, I think, sometimes creates situations where if you have a person, you have, like, in this particular case, you had these very large men, and God created this situation in order to make a point. In order to make a point that even if someone is physically large and huge and powerful and physically very strong, going against him in the name of God, you can defeat him. That's what David, who was just a boy, proved when he went against Goliath. And with King Og, of course, the children of Israel were able to defeat King Og when they came out of the land of Egypt before they liberated the land of Israel. They were able to defeat him. He was also a giant. And so I think God created these situations and brought about situations where the Jews at times faced very frightening situations where it seemed from the physical, just from the sheer physical aspects of things, that the Jews weren't going to be able to survive and weren't going to be able to prevail. And God does this to show that no matter what the odds seem like, and even if you're against an opponent who is much bigger, when God wants you to win, you'll win. Now, that doesn't mean, of course, that we depend on miracles. We're not allowed to depend on miracles. I don't suggest that JTFers go up to someone three times their size and start a fight with them and say, "I'm doing it in the name of God." You don't have a right to speak in the name of God. We're not in that situation in our generation. But we have learned that there are times when God will do miraculous, incredible things for us in order to sanctify his name, in order to show that he is God. That's what happened with Israel in the Six-Day War, when the Jews were outnumbered 100-1 and won a war in just 6 days, quadrupling in size, had the Jewish state quadrupled in size. That's what's happened on a national level. It's what's happened on a personal level. And it's what happened with David versus Goliath, and it's what happened with King Og. God creates circumstances. When he decides that the time has come to sanctify his name, where he brings down the big and the powerful. Anyway, thank you very much, Ruby Stars. And now we go to our good friend Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what is your opinion of the Afikin bus company in Israel having separate lines for Jews and Arabs?" Unquote. Chicago Jew, I wish that were true. They don't have separate lines for Jews and Arabs. I wish they did. The reality is that they had buses that were going to Arab so-called villages in Judea and Samaria, and the Arabs burned two of their buses down, destroyed two of their buses. And so after their buses were destroyed, and after the bus drivers were threatened, they decided they didn't want to run bus lines into Arab towns or villages anymore because their employees were in danger. It was just a simple matter of survival. They wanted to. They're leftists. They're businessmen. They just want to make money. They were willing to pick up Arab passengers and run into Arab towns, the buses. They had no problem with that. But when they saw that their personnel were going to get killed, and that two of their buses were completely burned down and destroyed, they were afraid. They're afraid now to pick up Arabs and go into Arab villages and Arab areas in Judea and Samaria. And so the news media took this story and used this story to say, "Oh, you see, there's apartheid in Israel now." Well, it's complete. It's complete baloney. There are no separate lines. But you want to know something? And when you consider what the Arab Muslim Nazis have done to the Jewish people and their attitude toward Jews, there should be separate lines. There aren't, but there should be. Anyway, thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to the great waiting for the mother plane to come, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, why do you rule out that NOI, which is Nation of Islam, could obtain the bomb? Couldn't wealthy blacks like the rap filth and NBA players finance such a project? Unquote. I don't think they have the brains, and I don't think I just don't see it. First of all, for them to get the bomb, they'd have to get it from a country obviously that has the bomb. They could never create a nuclear bomb. Is it possible that Muslim terrorist organizations could get their hands on a nuclear bomb? That is possible. But I don't think they would hand it over to these idiots. Farrakhan's group, Nation of Islam, these Muslim countries are not going to trust that jerk, that mental case, and his mental case followers. There's no way. If they're going to hand it over to somebody, they're going to hand it over to somebody in Hezbollah or Hamas or Fatah or one of the terrorist organizations or Al-Qaeda or one of the terrorist organizations. That's the great danger of Iran going nuclear. That's the great one. It's one of the great dangers. It's not the only one, but it's one of the great dangers that they would share it with Muslim terrorist organizations. And that is a real possibility. And the Muslim terrorist organizations, their dream would be to smuggle it into an American city and set it off and kill millions of Americans. That's their dream, God forbid. But that's their dream. Anyway, thank you, waiting for the mother plane. And now we go to the great Pyramid Head fan who writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, what exactly is OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, and what are the symptoms, unquote? Okay, well, obsessive compulsive disorder, it could be a very serious problem. There are different degrees in different people. It's a neurotic condition. It could eventually become a psychotic condition. By the way, the difference between neurosis and psychosis, neurosis is a mental condition which is disturbing and is a problem, a mental problem, but you can still function in society with neurosis if you're neurotic. Psychosis already is where the mental problem has reached a stage where you can't function anymore in society, where your behavior now has gone over the edge. OCD OCD can be very, very serious. It can be a very, very serious illness. And, I mean, some of the symptoms, let's see some of the symptoms. The basic symptom is that somebody feels a compulsion to do something all the time. Feels some compulsion to do something. For instance, some people constantly feel the need to wash their hands over and over and over again. Some people feel the need to lock the door over and over again to make sure the door is locked. Even if they lock the door, they don't believe they locked it. They have to keep checking and they have to keep locking it again. Or turning off the lights over and over and over again, they do it to make sure they really did it. Or if they're counting or checking numbers, or they have to do it over and over and over again because they're so afraid they might have made a mistake, or they're so afraid they didn't see it right or didn't read it right. That is obsessive compulsion. That is obsessive compulsive behavior. In other words, checking and rechecking every action. It can also involve all types of thoughts. You know, people can have thoughts in their mind and that keep coming up and popping into their mind and they become obsessive about these thoughts. So it could be a pretty serious problem. It could be serious. Are there ways to control it and treat it? Obviously there are. Unfortunately, psychiatrists and psychologists today usually use drugs to treat things. That's very unfortunate because the drugs have side effects. Some of the drugs are addictive and the drugs are harmful to the body. Some of them are harmful to the body. Sometimes there's no way to avoid using drugs. Sometimes there's just no way out. If somebody can't function at all, sometimes you have no choice. But of course, if possible, the best way to deal with these things is in a drug-free way, if possible. Somebody who has these symptoms, somebody who feels this compulsion, they have to try to have discipline and try to control themselves and just say to themselves, Like if somebody feels they have to lock the door over and over again because they're not sure if they locked the door, they keep rechecking to make sure that they really did it. They know they did it, but they keep rechecking. They keep rechecking. They feel insecure. Just assume that the door is locked when you've locked it the first time and have the discipline to walk away. And do the same thing with the turning off lights, and do the same thing if you're counting or checking something, if you're checking or rechecking something. Try to have the discipline to trust yourself. And if you occasionally make a mistake, don't worry about it. Try to have the discipline. And if you have the discipline, if you try to control your thoughts and control your actions and control the checking and rechecking, you can treat yourself sometimes. And, you know, but it's not easy. It's not easy. And, some of it, you know, sometimes you need God's help. It also helps if you believe and if you pray and believe, and hopefully God will help you if somebody has this problem. Anyway, that's just the little that I know about it, the pyramid head fan. I mean, unfortunately, many people have this problem. This is a pretty widespread issue. Psychiatrists, psychologists, and study and researchers have found that it's pretty widespread, that a lot of people occasionally have this. Sometimes it's not as serious. Sometimes it's very serious. So it depends on the individual. And of course, there are people who don't have it at all. There are many people who don't have it at all. But probably a large percentage of the population has it to a certain degree. And so it's something, it's something that has to be dealt with discipline and with faith. And if someone finds that they're unable to control it by themselves, sometimes they have to turn to somebody else for help. Anyway, thank you, Pyramid Head Fan. And now we go to Corey Deserved It, who writes, and I quote, "Hello, Chaim. How is Reuven Ben Avraham doing and whatever came of him? Is he still associated with JTF? Does he have a website, blog?" Unquote. He doesn't have a website or a blog. He's doing fine, Baruch Hashem, at least the last time I spoke to him, which wasn't that long ago. And yes, he is still associated with JTF. He's still helping. In fact, he's helping us with something. He is still associated with us, yes. He's doing fine. He's doing fine, Baruch Hashem. I do think it would be a great idea. I really should get together with him every now and then, and we should do a video on the economy, because people were very impressed with his knowledge on the economy and his very accurate predictions about the housing bubble. And he predicted everything that happened down to the last detail. I mean, he's a brilliant person. Anyway, thank you, Corey. Thanks for asking. And now we go to the great Tzelhar, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, can you give a eulogy on El Presidente Hugo Chavez?" Unquote. I don't know. I don't know if this is a eulogy, but I can sum up some of the things we know about Hugo Chavez. Yimash Movezichro Shem Reshaim Yirkav. Hugo Chavez was an example of true evil. True evil. He supported, for instance, Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. He actually wanted Iran to develop nuclear bombs, and probably would have been delighted to see Iran use the nuclear bombs against America and Israel and murder millions of innocent people. Chavez was a Jew hater, so he would have loved to see Israel destroyed. He openly called for Israel's destruction. And so he would have loved to see Israel incinerated by nuclear bombs, God forbid. He also would have loved to see the gringos in the United States blown up and killed as well, God forbid. He supported Hezbollah and allowed Hezbollah to establish bases and headquarters in Venezuela, in the Western Peninsula. And he supported other Islamic terrorists. He invited terrorists from all over the world to come to Venezuela. He, of course, supported the communist dictatorship in Cuba. And he himself was an atheist. He himself was a Marxist, a communist, an atheist. But he hated America and Israel so much. He so hated and envied America and Israel that he was willing even to work with Muslim terrorists just so that he could attack America and attack Israel and work to destroy America and Israel and nations that represent anything even remotely moral, he despised and wanted to destroy. That was Hugo Chavez, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro Shem Reshaim Yirkav. Thanks for the question, Selhar. And now we go to, or the suggestion, and now we go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic. Dr. Dan writes, and I quote, "If the universe was created just for us, do you think unintelligent life could exist on other planets such as extraterrestrial plants and animals?" Unquote. Well, of course, it's possible. My guess is no. My guess is that it doesn't exist. I can't be sure, obviously, but my guess is that there is no other life on other planets. I think God created the planets and the galaxies and the stars as a manifestation of His greatness and glory to show us how limitless His power is. I think He did it all just so that we could see how powerful and how vast His power is. I really believe that. And that's what Chazal, the rabbis in the Talmud, generally believe. By the way, the rabbis in the Talmud do not definitively say if there's life on other planets or not. They don't definitively say it. They give the view that there probably is not. That there probably is not life on other planets. But they don't say definitely, because if God wanted to do that for whatever reason, of course, anything is possible in the universe that God created. We don't know definitively. Anyway, thank you so much, Dr. Dan, our great voice of common sense, reason, and logic. And now we go to our good friend 112, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, do you think Holland, Norway, Sweden, Germany, France, Finland, and Switzerland will be saved from Islam?" Unquote. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if Islam is going to be the thing that's going to destroy them in the end. That's just one of the threats they face. They also have a situation of moral decay. The moral decay in their countries are destroying their societies. So I think it's just one of the threats. These are very anti-Semitic countries, very anti-Israel countries. Nations that work to destroy Israel wind up getting happening to them what they wanted to do to Israel. So right now, I think they're headed toward a very severe divine punishment. Only if people, the individual people in these countries, if they repent and if they change their ways and do what God commands them to do, they can be spared. Certain individuals can be spared, if not in this world, then in the next. But I think that Islam is only one of the problems that they're facing. It is a serious problem, but it's only one of the problems. Anyway, thank you, 112. And now we go to our very good friend, Kahana Loyalist, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, have you noticed that the TV show Law and Order and its spin-offs are very anti-Semitic?" Unquote. Absolutely, Kahana Loyalist. In fact, I did TV shows when I had the cable TV show. We did whole TV shows about Law and Order. It's a very anti-Semitic program. They've had programs openly anti-Semitic, Nazi-like episodes where they speak about the Jews the way the Nazis speak about the Jews, that the Jews are plotting against the United States, that they're all Israeli agents, they're all disloyal to America and loyal to Israel. You know, this whole nonsense about being loyal to Israel and not being loyal to America is such a ridiculous, absurd question. And I'll tell you why it's ridiculous and absurd. Anyone who's against Israel, if you have an American who's against Israel, they're guaranteeing the destruction of America. So how could you be loyal to America? How could you say I'm a patriotic American and I'm doing something that guarantees the destruction of America? It's an absolute contradiction. If you're loyal to America, you have to support Israel if you don't want America to be destroyed. Unless you don't believe what it says in the Bible, and unless you don't believe what it says in the Torah, that nations that go against Israel will be destroyed. I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee. But anyway, this program is on NBC, which is an unbelievably anti-Semitic network. And yes, very, very anti-Semitic. And it just shows what Hollywood and what the news media and what the big corporations in this country are really all about. They despise the Jews. Jews don't understand how much they're hated. And they're not only hated by Gentile anti-Semites, they're hated by Jewish anti-Semites. The Jewish anti-Semites in Hollywood and in the news media literally work to destroy their own people. As crazy as and incredible as it sounds, that literally is what takes place. And you know why they get away with it? Because the Jews put up with anything. You could do anything you want to the Jews and get away with it. They put up with anything. And some of the leading people who will help you if you want to do something anti-Semitic will be self-hating Jews. So that's the situation we're in because of the insanity of this generation. I hope and pray the day comes when we'll become a big, powerful movement and we'll show Jews and we'll show the world how we're supposed to react to things like this. Anyway, thank you very much, Kahana Loyalist. And now we go to the fantastic Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, Ahmadinejad prays Chavez Yimach Shmo V'Zichro at his funeral as if he was godly and compared him to Jesus and the Mahdi. But wasn't Chavez an infidel, or was he a closet Muzi? Unquote. No, he definitely, I don't believe he was a closet Muzi. I think he was a communist. The Muslims will praise infidels that help their cause. Really evil people. There are certain exceptions. It's amazing, but they usually hate anyone who's not a Muslim. But they will praise certain non-Muslims who are really, really evil and do really, really good things for their cause, like Hitler. The Muslims love Adolf Hitler, Yimach Shmo. They adore Hitler. Mein Kampf, Hitler's notorious autobiography, is the second bestseller in the Arab world and in the Muslim world after the Quran. They absolutely love Hitler. So there are certain infidels like Hitler and Chavez that the Muslims actually adore. The Muslims admire very violent, very cruel, very brutal people who do terrible things to their infidel enemies. Even if the person doing it is an infidel themselves, they admire and respect that individual for doing that. So, anyway, I know it sounds strange. It sounds like a dichotomy. It sounds strange, but it's a phenomenon that exists in the Muslim world, and we see it again with Hitler. Thank you, Binyamin Yisrael. And now we go to the great Say No to Islam, who writes, and I quote, Satmar Jewish couple has been brutally killed by Julio Acevedo. Their newborn baby also died. Your comments, please, unquote. It's absolutely obscene. What Say No to Islam is referring to, for those of you that are not from the New York area, this newly wedded couple, Satmar Hasidic couple, both 21 years old. The woman was pregnant. This maniac was driving on a side street. I think it was in Williamsburg. And this maniac is driving 60 miles an hour on a street where the speed limit is 20 miles an hour. And of course, he crashes into them and kills this couple. The baby in her womb. Survived, though, temporarily, was taken to the hospital, survived, and then eventually died in the hospital as well. So three human beings murdered by this beast. This beast has an arrest record of, you know, all types of traffic-related things, you know, driving under the influence, and similar. In other words, this is his history, aside from the fact that in addition to that, he has a criminal record. And he ran. He killed them. He crashed into them, and then ran away. You know, until they tracked him down, and because somebody got his license plate number, they tracked him down. But if they hadn't gotten his license plate number, hadn't tracked him down, he would have just left them to drop dead there. Just would have killed them and ran away and didn't even care. It's unbelievable, unbelievable. And by the way, the police department, New York police, who always charge somebody with, if somebody did two things wrong, they'll charge them with 100 different offenses when they don't like you. In this case, they're undercharging him. They're charging him with they're not even charging him with vehicular homicide. They're not even charging him with manslaughter. Nothing. He should be charged with murder, and his head should be cut off. This filthy pig, yimach shmo v'zichro. But he's not even being charged. He's not even being charged with manslaughter, which shows, again, anti-Semitism. That's anti-Semitism in the police department and in the district attorney's office in Brooklyn. That's pure anti-Semitism. The reason they're letting him get away with it and undercharging him is because of anti-Semitism. Anyway, thank you. Say no to Islam. And now we go to the great Confederate Kahanes, who writes, and I quote, "Der Chaim was hearing about what happened to the Fuhrer of Venezuela, some of the best news you heard in a long time. I thought it was," unquote. Yeah, it certainly is good news when evil people die, when the evil depart from this world, and when they get the punishment that awaits them in the next world, because you know he's going to be severely punished in the next world. Obviously, that's something that we should be joyous about. We're supposed to be joyous, actually. It's a commandment. We're supposed to be joyous when the evil are destroyed and when the evil leave this world. And you couldn't get any more evil than Hugo Chavez. I mean, he, yimach shmo v'zichro, shem reshaim yirkav, may his name and memory be obliterated. May the name of the wicked rot. That's what I just said in Hebrew. Those are Hebrew curses against evil people. He is the epitome of evil. And of course, we're very happy, at least, that he's gone. And hopefully, all the other evil people in the world, we look forward to the day when all the other wicked, evil, monstrous people in the world join him. Anyway, thank you, Confederate Kahanist. And now we go to our good friend Eli Yitzchaki. Eli Yitzchaki from the Hebrew Forum. Oh, Baruch Haba, welcome. Welcome to the English Forum, Eli Yitzchaki. Eli Yitzchaki writes, and I quote, "Hello, Chaim. What is your opinion on Chaim Arlozorov and Rudolf Kastner? Both of them were killed," unquote. Well, Chaim Arlozorov was a leftist. He was killed, and they falsely accused the Jabotinsky people, Abrasha Stavsky, and they falsely accused two or three Jabotinsky followers, three right-wing Jews, of being involved in the murder. It was a complete frame-up. Even the British courts, which were notoriously anti-Semitic, even the British courts ended up acquitting, ended up ruling. The British courts didn't, but the British had a commission and unanimously decided that the Jabotinsky people were not guilty. I mean, it was so obvious that this was a pure frame-up. It was really, really an outrage what they did. And it was one of the type of smears that the left-wing news media loves to do in Israel, unfortunately. Rudolf Kastner, yimach shmo v'zichro, shem reshaim yirkav, was someone responsible for the murder of hundreds of thousands of Jews in Hungary. He was the head of the Judenrat in Hungary, and he helped the SS find the names and addresses and locations of all the Jews in Hungary. He handed over the Jews of Hungary and handed over their names, addresses, and locations to save himself and to save hundreds of other leaders in Hungary. So he was an example of the ultimate example of a Jewish traitor. And of course, David Ben-Gurion and Chaim Weizmann and all of the leaders of the State of Israel, the socialist leaders of the State of Israel, defended him when he came to Israel. They defended him when it was exposed. They stood by him. And then eventually he was killed because they didn't want him to. I think he was killed because I think the Israeli government didn't want him to reveal what he knew about the connection of Ben-Gurion and all these other leaders to the Judenrat in Europe. So I think they decided to kill him. But he is the ultimate example of an evil traitor. Anyway, thank you very much, Eli Yitzchaki. ושוב, ברוך הבא לפורום האנגלי שלנו. And now we go to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, should prostitution be illegal? Why yes and or why not? Okay, let's start with that. Prostitution should be illegal, absolutely. Because if you legalize it, it's going to encourage more prostitution. Prostitution leads to moral decadence. It leads to the breakdown of discipline. It leads to the breakdown of family life. It's an evil practice, and it's something that should be very much discouraged. And the consequences for the women are terrible as well. In situations of prostitution, many of the women become drug addicts, alcoholics. They're beaten by the men, by their pimps who send them out. Some of the women sleep with 30, 40 men a week, sometimes more than that, sometimes 100 men a week. I mean, it's horrible, horrible what happens to them. Many of the prostitutes eventually commit suicide or are suicidal, have suicidal thoughts at least. It's a very, very cruel profession, and it's something that should be discouraged, and making it illegal does reduce, at least to a certain extent, the incidence of it, and shows that society does not approve of it. If you legalize it, that's like showing society approves of it, and whenever you legalize something like prostitution or drugs, it increases the amount of decadent behavior involved. And now, Tag Mechir writes, does pornography prevent rapes? Unquote. Tag Mechir, the opposite is true. I mean, we, 100 years ago, pornography was completely illegal. Even 50, 60 years ago, what we today would see in pornography was completely illegal 50 or 60 years ago. And the number of women being raped was much lower. So if pornography prevented rapes, then why is it that as pornography laws have been liberalized, and as we have more and more pornography, we have more and more incidents of rape? Pornography encourages rape. Anything that stokes the yetzer hara, the evil inclination, anything that excites the evil inclination in a person, whether it's sexual or whether it's gambling or whether it's drugs or whether it's alcohol, anything that does that is not a positive thing. It's not positive to feed into someone's baser instincts, to their evil instincts. That is very, very negative. The best thing to do is to starve the evil instincts, or to replace them, or to channel them into something positive. Anyway, Tag Mechir now writes, 3, should junk foods be taxed even more? Unquote. If it were up to me, yes. I think junk foods kill people. I know there are people that don't like to hear that, but I'm against income taxes. I would repeal all income taxes. But cigarettes, junk food, things that hurt you, I would tax, and I would tax them heavily. Yes. So we can tax commodities. We can tax goods. We can tax consumer items. I'm not against using taxes to tax consumer items. Income tax I'm against, because that automatically confiscates from someone their wages. But a tax on goods and services, people have the choice whether or not to buy those goods or services. That gives people at least certain choices. And if something is really unhealthy, sure, the taxes should be higher on something that's unhealthy than on things that are healthy. Why should we have the same taxes on things that kill you, on things that we know kill you, that we have on fruits and vegetables? I don't think we should have any taxes on fruits and vegetables. Anyway, but that's just my opinion. Thank you, Tag Mechir. And now we go to the fantastic EB22, who writes, and I quote, please discuss your opinion of the Gush Katif Museum in Jerusalem. Mike Huckabee spoke at their Brooklyn fundraising dinner, unquote. I don't know very much about it, EB. I can't go there because it's in Jerusalem and I'm not allowed to go. So I don't know very much about it. If it is something that keeps us aware of the terrible crime that was committed when 10,000 Jews were driven out of their homes in Gush Katif to hand it over to the Hamas Muslim Nazi terrorists, to hand over Gaza to the Muslim Nazi terrorists. If the Gush Katif Museum enables us to remember and immortalize that terrible injustice, that terrible crime, so that hopefully we'll be inspired to work to make sure it never happens again, then it would be a good thing. Then it would be a good thing. But I don't want to say for sure because I don't know. I don't know if they say, I hope they don't say wimpy things there and praise evil people there. That's also possible. If it praises the Yesha Council, for instance, who are the evil people that made the expulsion possible, then I wouldn't be happy with it. I just don't know. I don't know enough about it. Anyway, thank you, EB22. And now we go to the great Gematria, who writes, and I quote, "Hi, Chaim. How do you feel about Yair Lapid possibly becoming the Minister of the Treasury and Bennett as Labor Minister? What does it mean for Israel?" Unquote. I'm not happy at all with this marriage, this alliance between Yair Lapid from Yesh Atid and Naftali Bennett from Habayit HaYehudi. Habayit HaYehudi means the Jewish home. Yesh Atid means there is a future. Those are two political parties, and these two parties are working together in conjunction. They've entered the coalition, they've entered the government, they're entering the government together. I'm not happy at all with that because Yair Lapid is an evil person. His father, Tommy Lapid, was a traitor who hated the Jewish religion and hated religious Jews, who referred to the Kahanists as fascists and Nazis, who had a program on television where he spouted his hatred on a daily, every night on television. Yair Lapid is his son. And he's like Rand Paul and Ron Paul, what I was told, you know, the same thing. He's a more clever version of his father. Sometimes sons learn the mistakes of their fathers, and if they have an evil father, and they learn how to do it more effectively. And I think that's what's happened with Yair Lapid. So I think he's a dangerous person. And Naftali Bennett, who's supposed to represent the religious nationalists, he's another Yesha Council hack. He's working together with him and cooperating with him, and I just think it's a dangerous combination for Israel. I'm very concerned about this new Israeli government. I think it's dangerous. Anyway, thank you, Gematria. And now we go to our good friend Da Vinci. Da Vinci writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, in chapter 3, verse 15 of the first book of Moses, it says that there will be enmity between women and snakes. How should we interpret this?" Unquote. Well, first of all, the story of the snake, Hanachash, in the book of Adam and Eve, is a story with a lot of symbolism. The snake represents the evil inclination in people. The snake represents, in the Hebrew language, the snake actually represents nature. Because human beings... The snake, by the way, doesn't represent snakes, the type of snakes that we see in nature. It actually represents human beings, a certain element in human behavior. Human beings are the most advanced animals. Human beings are just very intelligent, advanced animals, much more intelligent than the other animals. And if a person looks at themselves just as a very intelligent monkey or a very intelligent animal, more intelligent than the monkeys and more intelligent than dolphins and more intelligent than the other animals, and only sees nature, you'll see that human beings, like in many ways, are like animals. We eat and animals have to eat. We sleep and animals have to sleep. We have eyes and can see the way animals can. We can hear the way animals can. We taste things the way animals can. We reproduce the way animals can. But there's something different about human beings that differentiates them completely from animals. Human beings can speak. Human beings can go against their nature and against their instincts. Human beings can make choices that go against their instincts and nature, which animals cannot do. Human beings have continuity and progress. If you have a group of monkeys, and the monkeys, 1,000 years ago, you had a group of monkeys in Africa, and you see how they lived 1,000 years ago, and then you go back to the same place in Africa 1,000 years later, the monkeys still live the same way they lived 1,000 years ago. They never progressed. They never achieved anything or learned how to do anything differently. They still swing from trees, and they still do what monkeys do. But human beings have the ability to progress tremendously, to learn tremendously, to advance tremendously. Human beings are not like the other animals. There's a complete separation. So even though we have certain bodily aspects that are like the animals, we are actually way above that. We have a soul. And our soul gives us the ability to create. We are creators. We are innovators. We have a thinking process that enables us to advance in a way that no other animal can. And so there's a continuity for human beings that doesn't exist in the animal world, that the animal world can never even comprehend. They wouldn't even understand what this means or how to even begin having continuity and having and progressing and achieving new things. Animals wouldn't even understand the concept. And so the snake represents human beings only on the level of nature. Human beings on the level of nature are the human being are what we eat, drink, sleep, reproduce, physical pleasures. That's human beings on the level of nature, and evil people think that that's all we are. Evil people live in the world just so that they could eat, drink, sleep, enjoy themselves. Now, that's what evil people live for, and it is evil to only live for that, to basically live like an animal, like a more intelligent animal. It's an animal, it's a more intelligent animal, more talented animal, but an animal. Doing the same thing that animals do, the same function that a dog has, the same function a cat has, except you're more intelligent. You're doing it more intelligently, but the same basic things. Human beings are supposed to live for more than that. We have a higher calling. We have a higher purpose in this world. Everything about us tells us that there's something special and something far more important about human beings. Something that can change the dynamics of everything in the world. We have the power to do this, and no animal can do this. And so the enmity between the snake and the women, snakes represent nature. The snake represents nature with all of its cruelty and barbarity and crudity, all the crude aspects of nature. Women, with their gentle character, with their gentler character, are very often disgusted by the cruder aspects of nature. In other words, if something is very crude or bloody or violent, women are disgusted by it. So when there are crude things in nature, that the snake represents the crudest aspects of nature, when there are crude things in nature, women are disgusted by it because women have a gentler side. They have a gentler character. God created this special situation where women feel this enmity between themselves and between the crude aspects of nature. Why did God make women gentler? Why did God make it so that women are disgusted when they see blood, or are disgusted when they see violence, or are disgusted when they see a snake eat a rat, or are disgusted when they see cockroaches and certain types of creatures? Why are women disgusted by these things? Why are women more gentle? Because women have to be gentler in order to be able to take care of babies and children. To properly raise the babies and the children, you have to be gentle and kind and patient. And that's why God created women with a gentler character than with men, so that they would be better able to raise babies and children and to give a better example to babies and children, because they are generally with the babies and the children more than the men, usually. Anyway, I hope that wasn't too complex. I hope at least what I said was comprehensible. I hope so. But thank you very much, Da Vinci, for the very interesting question. And now we go to the great British sword, who writes, and I quote, Jews leaving France for England. What the hell are they thinking? Even I'm trying to get out of here now, unquote. British sword, the difference between you and the Jews who are moving to England, you're very sane and very normal, and they're not. They have a Jewish homeland, they have their own country, and they're moving from one place with very serious troubles to another place where they're going to have very serious troubles. They just don't learn. But you British sword are very logical and very sensible, and you're sane and they're not. What can I tell you? Anyway, thank you, British sword. And now we go to the fantastic Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, as a politician in Israel, do you plan to compromise on any issues such as taxes and social welfare issues, unquote. Sometimes you have to compromise as long as you're not compromising on basic principles. On certain issues, I will never compromise. Our objective of getting the Arab Jew haters out of Israel, on that I'm not going to compromise. We've got to do everything we can to achieve that. On making sure that the entire land of Israel remains in the hands of the Jewish people and we liberate as much of the land of Israel as possible, on that there'll be no compromise. We will never retreat from any part of the land of Israel, God forbid. On the need to progress so that we become a country with more Jewish values and more Jewish morals and move more and more toward a Torah society with Jewish education, on that there'll be no compromise. The fact that we want to move in a certain direction, on the principles, we're not going to compromise, on the basic, fundamental, general principles. How to get there and how to achieve those goals, sometimes, in order to get a Knesset majority, you sometimes have to compromise on certain issues. But again, as long as the compromise is not on basic principles. Anyway, thank you very much, Maimonides, and I want to thank all of our great JTFers for another program that I very much enjoyed doing. Until next week, Shalom.